Where do we go from here? That's one of the big questions that brings you to this podcast. You come here to learn from experts about the latest news on the biggest stories that are impacting our lives and our families during this fateful year. In a year like 2020, you might feel especially grateful for every opportunity to be together, whether that's phone calls or video chats with people you love, or programs like 1A that give us space to connect over ideas and information. You can show your gratitude with a donation to your local NPR station. Just go to donate.npr.org/1A. So if you can afford to make a donation to support this program, it's very easy. Again, you can simply visit donate.npr.org/1A to make a gift to your local station. That's donate.npr.org/1A. And thanks. This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. The United States can sometimes feel incomprehensible, and we live here. Imagine trying to explain the complexities of America to non-Americans in translation.
Mientras Donald Trump está bloqueando la transición de poder,
testou os limites do cargo.
C'est probablement le slogan le plus populaire. Pourtant, à mesure que nous nous éloignons de la date.
That's the daily work of foreign correspondents. They're a small group with a big job, one that gets a lot bigger during election years. How are they explaining the events of the election to their readers and listeners? Well, we have three foreign correspondents here to answer that question and a lot more. Joining us now is Nadia Bilbasi. She's the Washington Bureau Chief for Al Arabiya. That's a Saudi news channel based in Dubai, which broadcasts across the Middle East. She's been reporting from D.C. for 18 years. Nadia, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Bricio Segovia. He's the White House correspondent for the Mexican news station MVS. He's been on the job for 5 years. Bricio, welcome.
Pleasure to be here. Perfect pronunciation of my name, by the way.
Thank you. Also with us, Kenyan journalist Larry Maldowo. He's the North America correspondent for the BBC. That's the British Broadcasting Corporation. And he's the newbie of the bunch. He's been on the beat full time since June. Larry, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So let's start with the 2020 election. And Larry, I'll come to you first. What do your audiences back home make of what's happening here?
One question I hear a lot is, how can there be two winners of an election? And also, especially from the Africans, how can a sitting president lose an election and then spend all his time tweeting that he won the election? And this is because many Africans see America as a beacon of democracy. This is the country that puts out statements from the State Department saying you must respect institutions, you must have a peaceful transfer of power, that you must allow for democratic work to go on. And so they watch what's happening right now, and it is mind-boggling to them that this is happening in America, which they follow every election, and they always expect that it's going to go smoothly, that they see all the contradictions happening in Africa, and yet they're choosing the other foot now.
How are you attempting to explain those contradictions?
So it's complicated because, one, I'm from Kenya. I'm originally from Kenya. The first election I ever covered was the Kenyan election in 2007, where both candidates declared that they won the election. The country descended into chaos. More than 1,300 people died. I work for the British Broadcasting Corporation, which broadcasts around the world. And so there's people who follow in the UK or across the world who also see this as some strange thing that's happening. And I don't think I'm doing a good enough a job of explaining all the things. For instance, this is something that many people, especially in the South, in the global South, don't understand, that America doesn't have a national electoral commission. Mm-hmm. There is no federal agency that supervises the entire election. That's why there's 10,000 small electoral jurisdictions that apply the laws differently, that count differently, and it leads to all this maze and confusion, and therefore the lawsuits. And that's something we have to keep saying all the time.
Well, if it's any consolation, we have to say it all the time too, and we're American journalists. Bricio, how much interest is there internationally in what's happening here in the U.S.?
Oh, there's a huge interest. Anything that happens here, especially in the capital, has an impact in the rest of the world. My main audience is in Mexico for MVS Radio. So being a neighbor country, you can imagine how interested they are in whatever is happening, especially in this election, which we all have been hearing is the most important election in recent times, in recent years. So obviously, that's going to have an impact as well in the future of Mexico, in the relations between the both countries. And everyone is kind of expecting what is going to happen, trying to understand as well what is happening at this point in time, right? We have different concepts that we need to translate. We are not just reporting as our fellow correspondents do here for the U.S., for U.S. audience, right? We are translating concepts. We are translating how the system works here. So that comes with an extra challenge that sometimes people are not aware of, but it's quite a challenge, especially these days.
Abrisia, what's the most challenging thing to explain to global audiences about America more generally, beyond the election?
Well, I think we need to understand that as an international audience, they don't understand America, right? We have this concept of we are very familiar with whatever the U.S. is because we've been exposed all our lives to American culture, right? Like movies, like music. But that's just an illusion. We might be familiarized with what we think America is overseas, right? Like, but those are little bubbles like New York, like Washington, D.C., like L.A., like big cities that don't really represent the whole country. So I think breaking that conception is already a challenge. It's hard to explain to an international audience that there is more than that, especially in the last 4 years. We've seen a huge amount of population emerge, and that is what we call the Trumpism, right? This movement that the current president I don't know if he created it, but he definitely, we saw this movement emerge. And it's hard to explain that that's always been there. That's a reality in the country. And they just haven't been exposed to that reality in culture and popular culture, I would say, like movies and music, as I was saying.
We got this tweet from Christina who says, what perceptions did you have of the U.S. before landing here on assignment, and how have they changed? Larry, I'll come to you first. We've got about a minute here.
All right. So the interesting thing is I actually went to grad school here, and I grew up on American culture, growing up on the other side of the world in Kenya. And what perceptions that I had is I thought I understood America. I thought I'd grown up on the culture and the music and the films and entertainment, and so I knew it. But the more I've gone out to places in the rural backwaters of Georgia or Kentucky or in Louisiana, the more I realize that I actually don't understand this country at all. And it's always a revelation for me, even as somebody who studied here and who works here, who tries to translate it for the rest of the world.
But what do you think you didn't understand that you're starting to wrap your head around?
You imagine you go to a certain place and this is a solidly conservative place, and everyone will, for instance, not take easily to a black man being a reporter and asking them questions. But people are actually quite kind most of the time. They don't fit into the mold of what you expect of them.
We're talking to Washington Bureau Chief for Saudi News Channel Al Arabiya, Nadia Bilbasi. Also with us, North America correspondent for the BBC, Larry Madowo, and White House correspondent for Mexico's MVS, Bricio Segovia. We'll hear more from them and from you in just a moment. I'm Jen White. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor AT&T. There's a lot that's different about this school year, but one thing that hasn't changed is AT&T's commitment to education. They're focused on keeping students and teachers connected to learning. It's why AT&T has connected over 200 million students with tools and technology for distance learning. Learn more at att.com/remote learning.
I'm Guy Raz, and on NPR's How I Built This, how Tim Ferriss, as an entrepreneur, author, investor, and podcaster, turned himself into a multi-million dollar brand. Subscribe or listen now.
I'm Jen White. This is 1A. We got this tweet from Elizabeth who says, what do you notice when comparing the way journalism is conducted in the U.S. versus in your country? P.S. I believe journalists are the real superheroes of today. Brice, I'll come to you first.
I think the main difference is that we look at whatever is happening in this country from an international perspective, or I should say with an external view. We see at it, we look at it from outside, as outsiders, if you like, even though we are living in the country. And I think that gives an extra layer of context or even depth to the news and the way we report them. I want to believe that also give us like an extra layer of objectivity because we are not so, personally involved in the process since we are not, I mean, in my case, I'm not a U.S. citizen, so I cannot really decide on elections, for instance, right? But I can actually see the impact that the decisions that Americans are making in this election, for instance, is going to have on them and also on my audience, because as I said earlier, any decision taken in this country, in the capital of power, it's going to have an impact in the rest of the world.
Nadia, what about for you?
I always believe that the media or journalism always reflect the state in general of the country. So you cannot really compare. It's very hard to compare certain countries because of the political system, whether it's a democracy or one-party state. But what, for me, I think what covering the U.S. for the last 18 years, what I have witnessed and have seen in the last few years, it is the state of polarization. If you look at the U.S. media, it's divided between right and left, between people who are pro the Trump administration and people who are against it, and they don't hide it. It's very clear. And then the line between just being a reporter and being an analyst or being an anchor or being somebody with an opinion has been blurred. Mm-hmm. So especially now, I think, the constant attack from President Trump on the media, calling us the enemy of the people, and vice versa from American networks has actually contributed to the state of division. And this division has manifested itself in the results of the election. We have seen that the country, 75 million voted for President Biden and something similar, 72 million voted for President Trump. And the media reflects that. You see it on every level, I think. So it makes it really hard trying to look into the truth and to generate a kind of light instead of just heat from all the arguments you have seen. Yesterday, I was on Saturday, rather, I was in the streets of Washington, D.C., reporting on this big protest by the President Trump's supporters, and people did not know who I report for. So they immediately assumed that I'm the media, then I'm anti-President Trump. So they will use words, verbally abuse you, etc. And I think this is what's happening now. So it is... The democracy should be a beacon, an example for the rest of the world, whether it's the third world countries or Arab countries. We always pride ourselves that we are journalists working in one of the biggest democracies in the world, Western democracies. And what we have seen is an assignment that sometimes it's very hard to relay information back to our audience. And as I said, our audience is just varied and it's diverse from, you know, all over the world, in the Middle East, Europe, and Africa, United States. So everybody's watching, but the task has become harder.
Larry, I'm curious to hear from you as well, because as you said, you spent grad school here in the States and thought you had an understanding of the U.S., but how do you see journalism being practiced differently here?
I think coming from the BBC, I am very aware of how different American media works, and the BBC is all about impartiality and very much like NPR, it's public service broadcasting, and We, for instance, as BBC journalists, are not allowed to have an opinion on anything of current controversy. We're supposed to present all sides and we strive for balance. And part of the polarization and the hyperpartisanship I see in America is a product of the way the media works. And I suddenly agree 100% with Nadia's point of view that the line between opinion and journalism has become blurred. And that what that leads to is people, especially Americans, seek out information from news sources who only agree with them. And you can see that in the way people are moving away from Fox News because they recognize that Joe Biden was duly elected president and they're going to Newsmax and OANN because those are the outlets that now still live in this alternate reality where President Trump still has a chance of overturning the outcome of the election. And that, whether it's on people's Facebook feeds, in the news sources they subscribe to, they are looking for information that does not challenge them. And I don't think there's any other country that there's this level of what passes as journalism, which is essentially opinion. And it's not just in the opinion hosts on primetime or in the opinion pages of the Journal or the New York Times, but it's in the straight, what is supposed to be straight news reporting, but in the way the questions are framed, in the way the whole segment is tilted. It's very much, you can tell what the journalist's opinion is and what is they like, what they're aiming for in that. And that's just something that's shocking for me as an outsider.
I'm curious whether, because it sounds like this is a specifically American dynamic that you see at play. Larry Brissio, what about for you?
I describe the relationship between U.S. media and the current administration as a dysfunctional relationship, right? When we have a partner and we keep fighting with each other, or we keep insulting each other, that's described as an abusive relationship, right? And an abusive relationship, it ends up being a dysfunctional relationship. And I think that is the current state of the U.S. media and this administration relationship. And that is an issue when it comes down to journalism. I think the red line of respect has been crossed several times, too many times, in my opinion. All those lines have been blurred. And at this point, everyone is using each other. I would say the administration is using media exposure just to play this game of fake media, rhetoric, and so on. And cable news, for instance, are using this precedent in order to get better ratings. So I think at this point, this is a dysfunctional relationship, and the U.S. cannot go any longer like this if they expect to have proper journalism or even keep people in power accountable for their actions, because otherwise they are losing trust of the audience. And once journalists or media outlets lose their trust, there's nothing left.
We got this question from a member of the 1A Text Club. They write, I too often hear claims that the United States is the greatest country to live in, even from those who come from other parts of the world. It annoys me. The world is so big and I'm a skeptic. Where, if anywhere, would you say offers a challenge to the notion that America is the best country to live? Larry?
I'm entirely biased because I happen to think France is a really great country to live in. And I think Kenya, where I'm from, is a beautiful place which offers the best in whether it's you want a nice safari in the middle of the city or a good beach holiday. But for different reasons, if you're looking for food, you can find it in France. If you're looking for good culture, you can find that in the UK. So America is a pretty great place to live. I'm not trying to undermine that thought, but I'm not saying it is the greatest and everywhere else pales in comparison.
Nadia, what about for you?
You know what? I hear this sentence often, and before I came to the United States, I thought it was exaggerated. But living here, I do agree. It is one of the best countries to live in the world. There is a sense of community. It's a country of immigrants. Regardless, I mean, we aspiring to be the perfect union, and it's a long way to go in terms of discrimination, especially against African Americans and what we have witnessed in the summer, etc. But I can tell you from a personal experience that you can integrate easily. You can make a name for yourself as a reporter very easily. While this does not happen in Britain or in France, and I studied in England, In France and Britain, the immigrants is still being seen as the outsiders. You cannot be one of the, there is a discrimination based on socioeconomic background, on your accent. Here, I think it's much easier for somebody. Of course, you have to be affluent, you have to be successful, but it paves the way for you to reach wherever you wanted to go in the United States. And there is a sense of community, I think. You don't see it. When you come from a place like Britain and you come to the United States, there is some refreshing sense of that solidarity, that openness, that the lack of reserve when it comes to people. People volunteer to help and to give you information and to be, they want you to be part of them. But again, we live in a bubble, and it's true that this is Washington, D.C., is a cosmopolitan city where you have the World Banks, you have every embassy, you have international community, etc. And the rural areas are different because there are two Americas. And it's true. There's the East Coast and then the West Coast, and there's the middle of America. And this is an eye-opening for us foreign reporters when you go to cover the primaries and the caucuses and to go on the road and see a different kind of, you know, what you see in New York or the big cities or in Washington, D.C. or in L.A. or elsewhere. But in general, I think you can make it if in America. It's a continent. Mm-hmm. You can have, I mean, if you want to add what Larry said about diversity when it comes to climates and weather and people and culture and food, it is a continent. But also because it's a continent, it's isolated from the rest of the world. It doesn't have the colonial history that the others had. So I think it lacks the international, intellectual curiosity for people to know and to seek information. And I always say, if you're a superpower, you cannot afford to be ignorant.
Mm. Breezy, I want to hear your answer after the break. We're getting the global take on America with Larry Madowo, Breezio Segovia, and Nadia Bill Basie. I'm Jen White. We'll get to more of your questions and our guests' answers in just a moment.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Simply Safe Home Security. Simply Safe has an arsenal of sensors and cameras that protect every inch of your home. Simply Safe has your back 24/7 with professional monitoring for break-in, fire, flooding, or medical emergencies. You can easily set it up yourself in about 30 minutes. Get a free home security camera when you purchase a Simply Safe system at simplysafe.com/NPR1A. You also get a 60-day risk-free trial.
Hi, it's Jen. Just a quick reminder that you can make a donation to support this program, and it's very easy. Simply visit donate.npr.org/1A to make a gift to your local station. That's donate.npr.org/1A. And thank you so much for your support. I'm Jen White. This is 1A. We're getting the global take on America with Larry Madowo, Breezio Segovia, and Nadia Bill Basie. And Breezio, before the break, we were asking the question whether there's a place that you would say offers a challenge to the notion that America is the best country to live in. What's your take?
Well, I would say whenever I hear that, and I hear it a lot over here, I always say, how many countries have you been to? Because I think it's impossible just to state that one country is better than the other. Yes, there might be certain things that are better in one place than in another country, but that doesn't mean that overall that country is better than any other country. That is just a misconception, I would say, and a lack of knowledge and even exposure of other cultures and places. That being said, I agree with Nadia that this is a land of opportunities. It's given me many, many opportunities. It's a great country to grow professionally. I mean, I think that's probably one of the best places. It's probably one of the best places to grow professionally. And then there's this sense of patriotism, which brings a sense of cohesion and unity in the country that I think many countries lack. But those opportunities I was mentioning come with depending on your privileges, right? I'm originally from Spain. I am a European Hispanic white male, and I can see how I have been treated better in many occasions than my fellow Latinos who have a darker skin tone or have an indigenous look or appearance. So yes, this country is a land of opportunities, but those opportunities don't come equally to everyone. And then I would also say, as much as I love this country, and I really do, I always see it as a failed welfare state in a way, because education and health and the health system should be the foundation of a welfare state. But here, millions of people cannot even afford that. So I think that when Americans actually say this is the best country in the world, they should actually think of all these little things and just sometimes be more humble. Like, yes, it is a great place, but there are so many other places who are also great in this world.
Well, the U.S. receives a lot of international attention. Do you think it receives perhaps too much to the detriment of thorough coverage of other parts of the world? Larry, your thoughts?
Absolutely. I don't think I'm going to equivocate on that, but that's because it's got this outsized influence in the world. And in the week of the election, I don't think on BBC World News, for instance, we covered enough of the rest of the world, because all the attention was on the US and the weeds of what's happening with the Electoral College and how far it's moving. And I'm sure colleagues of mine reporting on other parts of the world were a little frustrated that they can't get their stories on the air, because, and I guess that's not just a function of the editorial decisions, it's also what the audience is interested in, that they're much more attuned to what's happening here, and explanation and context and analysis that dwarfs almost everything else. And I'm sure Nadia must feel this as well, for a 24-hour news channel, when you're trying to balance coverage of your entire world, and when there's one country that's gained so much more interest, the BBC has, I think, 14 of us correspondents that cover the US. Lots of other countries get one correspondent to cover the whole country, even if it's as big as Brazil, for instance, or India. Well, we've got a few more people in India because of its size, but you see why America sucks out all the oxygen in the rundown.
Nadia, jump in here. What do you think about the attention the U.S. receives?
Oh, yeah, there's actually so many points I wanted to pick up of what my colleagues just mentioned. In terms, just very quickly, of is this the best country to live in? I mean, I think it's not fair to compare it to other countries, because America is a new place. It's only just like 200 and new nation, 240 plus year old. So it's not fair to compare it to Italy or to France or to Britain, where you can walk around on every corner of a street, there is a museum and there is, you know, art galleries, and there is like the joie de vivre, and there's all this kind of things that you don't have in America and you don't enjoy on a daily basis, whether it is the food, whether it's, you know, the culture, whether it's the clothes, the styling, everything else. So put this one aside. But I think one of the worst things about America is two things, actually, is higher education and health insurance. This is something that you get in Western Europe easily in any other democracy, and you don't have to be a socialist country to give every citizen health insurance, or to guarantee that you invest in the future labor market by making the higher education more subsidized or affordable to most families. I mean, if you have three or four kids, it's impossible to, without loans, to send them to school or to go to do their higher master's degrees or PhDs, etc. So this is something I think that need to be looked in. And we can have like one program just about America, what you like and what you don't like.
When we talk about this issue of coverage of America and whether it gets too much attention, what do you think about that idea?
I don't think it does get overseas, to me at least. I'm talking personally about my station. For the reason I mentioned is because all the decisions that the U.S. presidents affect people's life in the Middle East, whether it's in war or peace, as we have seen recently. And this is why everybody wants to know. America is a superpower, is a continent. So you have to keep telling people in our, at least in the Middle East, what at least closer to the decision makers and what they think in terms of what policy will reflect on their region. So I don't think that we saturated our screens with American coverage, but now obviously because of the election season, there was a need for it and everybody was interested to know who's going to become the next American president. But what I criticize is the American coverage about the world. That is completely lacking. And if I want to know what's happening elsewhere, I have to personally go online and trying to read the newspapers, whether it's British or French or German or Spanish or Japanese, whatever. So I feel actually that since I've been in America, my knowledge of the world has become less and less. And I've become less informed since I've been here. But my coverage the other way around, I think it has increased for the obvious reasons.
Parisio, does international coverage of the U.S. reflect the complexity, diversity, and size of the country? Because as we've said, you know, what happens inside the Beltway is very different than what happens, say, in Michigan, for example.
I have to say, just as my colleague Nadia was saying, the U.S. is a world superpower. We cannot ignore that. It's been a leading country for years and decades, which has shifted the course of history so many times. And even if we look at it from a security point of view, it is because of the U.S. that Western countries get some sort of protection as well. And I'm thinking NATO, for instance. So just because of that, I think the amount of coverage and attention, international attention that the US gets, it's actually fair. Mainly because whatever policy is decided here in Washington, D.C. will have an immediate effect in so many areas of the world, right? Depending on what the policy is and how it's going to be implemented. But I think it is necessary, actually, to have that kind of coverage and to have that kind of monitoring. I think that's the key word, and this is a journalist's job to keep people in power accountable. We don't have to forget that concept. This is actually what we're here for. We're not here to praise any government. We are actually here to keep them accountable.
I'm curious, Larry, or rather, Bricio, what do you most enjoy about your work as a foreign correspondent?
Well, I would say one of the things that I truly enjoy as a foreign correspondent is the exposure to stimuli. I think when I go back to my country, as I mentioned, I'm originally from Barcelona, Spain. I always feel that I'm lacking some sort of stimuli because since I get up in the morning, I turn on the radio, I watch the news, I open a newspaper, it doesn't matter. That very second, I'm exposed to so many new words, new concepts, so much knowledge, right? I step on the street, I, exchange a few words with my neighbor. Every single time I exchange, there's some sort of exchange for me. There is some sort of new cultural experience or new concepts that come to my mind. When I'm back in my country, obviously, I'm familiar with everything. I grew up there. So I lack that when I go back. And I think that's kind of a drug. And I've been doing this job as a foreign correspondent for almost 15 years. So it kind of, I kind of became addicted to it. And I don't know how to, how to get out of this thing now. But I think that's what I enjoy the most. And then let me add as well, what I enjoy the most of being a foreign correspondent here in Washington, D.C., because that is a very different experience. It's that you actually see how politics develop and how policies are made, and those policies have an impact in the rest of the world, and you can see it growing, and you can see the power spreading all over the city, and you have access to sources. One of your headlines can actually be a headline all over the world. So the impact that you have is amazing.
Well, we've only got a couple of minutes here, but this question comes from a member of our 1A text club who asks, how has America's standing in the world changed since the beginning of the Trump administration, and how do other countries view the possibilities of a Biden administration? Larry, I'll come to you first.
Certainly, I think the standing of America in this mirage of American exceptionalism has been shattered in the last 4 years, when America has recoiled from its international role, whether it's pulling out of the World Health Organization in the middle of a pandemic or the Paris Climate Accord. It's just people are starting to realize that they have to look to other places, to Germany or to France or to the UK, to maintain the international order. But also, it's not just in the important multilateral roles, but in the ways that people seemed to America as the prefect or the big brother of the world. That has been significantly dented, I think, in the Trump years. And that's why there's some level of optimism with the election of Joe Biden, and people think that he will be a continuation of the respect that President Obama had on the world stage, and is somebody who is much less, will not spend as much time on Twitter and more time speaking with America's allies and keeping track of what's happening around the world. I suddenly see that coming from the Global South, but also in the reaction to our coverage on BBC World News around the world.
Nadia, just about 30 seconds here, your thoughts?
I agree with what Larry said, but in the Middle East is different. In the Gulf states, they actually liked President Trump's policy vis-a-vis Iran, standing up to Iran, the militias in Iraq, for example. But if you're a Palestinian, they didn't like his position when he declared Jerusalem as a capital, the Golan Heights under Israeli sovereignty. Some people in Europe didn't like his position of not supporting them and undermining these alliances across the Atlantic.
Well, we could spend a lot more time talking to you, but we'll have to end it here for now. And I want to thank you for your time. That was Nadia Bilbasi. She's the Washington Bureau Chief for Al Arabiya. Larry Madowo, he's the North American correspondent for the BBC. And Bricio Segovia, he's the White House correspondent for MVS. Thanks to you all for your time. Well, remember, we're on Instagram. You can always follow the show at The 1A Show. Today's producer was Avery Kleinman. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for all of your great questions for our panel, and hopefully we'll get to do it again. And we will talk again tomorrow. This is 1A.